Have you ever, just stopped to think about how much power the FCC actually has when it comes to like internet policy? It seems like every other week there's another headline about net neutrality or some big regulatory battle over the internet.
Yeah, it really is a constant tug of war, isn't it? And trying to understand the legal basis of all that can be surprisingly complex, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive today. We're going to unpack a case that's really crucial for anyone who wants to make sense of how the internet's regulated, especially today. It's National Cable and Telecommunications, ASMV Brand X Internet Services, a 2005 Supreme Court decision that really set the stage for a lot of the internet policy debates that we're still having right now.
Yeah, it really goes to the heart of things like administrative law and statutory interpretation, which I know that might sound kind of dry at first,
Right.
but it's really anything but when you start to think about what's really at stake here.
So can we maybe kind of set the scene a little bit? Like, it's the early 2000s, broadband internet is becoming super popular, and everyone's trying to figure out, okay, how do we regulate this new technology? So what was the central conflict, would you say, that brought this case all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Well, you had these cable companies, right? They were already providing cable TV, and they started jumping into the internet game as well,
Right.
offering internet access over their existing cable lines, which was the rise of what we now call cable modem service.
Okay.
And the really big question that everyone was grappling with was, should these cable companies that are providing internet be subject to the same kind of strict oversight, the same kind of regulations as the phone companies?
So it's all about how to classify this cable modem service, right? Like, which regulatory bucket does it actually fall into?
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Okay.
And this is where the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, comes in. They decided to classify cable modem service as an information service, which basically meant lighter regulation, more flexibility for those companies. But then you have the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they disagreed. They argued that cable modem service should really be treated as a telecommunications service, and that falls under Title II of the Communications Act.
Okay.
And that, of course, would have meant more government oversight, potentially stricter rules about how these cable companies could operate.
So we've got this like fundamental disagreement, right? Like, how should we actually classify cable modem service?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what sends the case all the way up to the Supreme Court. So what were some of the key arguments, would you say, that each side was making?
Well, a lot of it boils down to how you interpret the Communications Act of 1934, which was written long before anyone could have imagined the internet that we know and use today.
Yeah, no surprise there, I guess. Trying to apply a law from the 1930s to the internet, that must have been a real challenge. So, what were some of the specific things, the sticking points, I guess we could say, the language of the act?
Sure. So the act, the way it defines a telecommunications service, it's basically pure transmission of information.
Okay.
Right, without changing its form or content. So it's just like a pipeline. And then an information service is defined as something that involves processing or manipulating the information in addition to just transmitting it.
Okay, so the question then becomes, did these cable companies offering internet access, did they fall neatly into one of these categories, or were they doing like a little bit of both?
Yeah, that's really the crux of the whole debate. And a lot of it hinged on this specific question. Does a cable company offer that pure transmission separately, on its own when it's providing internet access? The act itself, the language of it, it wasn't crystal clear on that point.
So what was the FCC's position on all this? How did they try to convince the court that, they were interpreting this law correctly?
Okay, so their argument was that cable modem service wasn't simply transmitting data, it was really a single integrated service. It combined transmission with all these different forms of data processing. They were basically saying, look, cable companies are doing more than just acting as a like a dumb pipe. They're shaping, managing, the data flow. So that makes this an information service.
Okay, so the FCC is arguing for the information service classification, which of course means less regulation. But before we get into how the court ultimately decided, I think we need to talk about this big legal idea that hangs over this entire case, Chevron deference. Can you maybe remind us what Chevron deference is and why it matters so much in this context?
Yeah, for sure. So Chevron deference, that comes from a 1984 Supreme Court case, Chevron USA Inc. v. Natural Resources Defense Council Inc.
Right.
And it's this, really important legal doctrine. What it says is that courts they should generally defer to how a federal agency interprets a statute.
Okay.
As long as that interpretation is reasonable, of course.
Uh-huh.
And this is especially true if the statute itself is ambiguous or unclear.
So if Congress passes a law and, like, the law's not perfectly clear on everything, the agency that's supposed to implement that law, they get some leeway in how they interpret it.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Okay.
And that's exactly what was going on in Brand X. The Supreme Court had to grapple with whether the FCC's interpretation of the Communications Act, which we've said is kind of vague on this whole cable modem issue, was reasonable enough to deserve deference under Chevron.
So the stakes are pretty high here.
Mm.
If the court sides with the FCC, it essentially gives the agency a lot of power to kind of shape internet policy as it sees fit.
Yeah.
But if they go with the Ninth Circuit, it could mean a lot more strict oversight of the cable companies.
Yeah.
And a very different landscape for internet regulation.
You got it. And that's exactly why Brand X is such a landmark case. It's not just about cable modems, right? It's about the balance of power between the courts and the agencies, and ultimately how much leeway the FCC has to regulate this constantly evolving, ever-changing technology that we call the internet.
Okay, so we've kind of set the stage. We've got the players. We understand what's at stake here, these high stakes. So now let's get into the Supreme Court's decision itself. So, who wrote the majority opinion, and what were some of their main arguments?
All right, well, the majority opinion was written by Justice Thomas.
Okay.
And this is where things get really interesting.
Okay, before we get into the specifics of Justice Thomas's opinion, I'd love to hear a little more about how Chevron deference actually played out. Like, how did the court use it in its reasoning?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, Justice Thomas, he basically walked through that two-step Chevron test that we talked about.
Okay.
So first, you have to figure out if the relevant section of the Communications Act, if it was ambiguous, like, could it reasonably be interpreted in more than one way?
Right.
And he said, yeah, it was ambiguous. The Act's definitions of telecommunications service and information service, they weren't really clear enough to definitively say, you know, how to classify cable modem service.
Okay, so ambiguity. Check. What's next in the Chevron two-step?
Right. So then they moved on to step two. Okay, is the agency's interpretation reasonable? And here, Justice Thomas sided with the FCC again. He agreed with their view that, you know, cable modem service was really this one single offering.
Mm-hmm.
It combines transmission and data processing. It's not really a separate offering of pure transmission alongside those other services. Because the FCC's reading of the act was reasonable, the court deferred to the agency under Chevron.
That's really interesting. So because of this ambiguity in the law, the FCC essentially got to decide how to regulate this whole new technology, and the court basically upheld that decision. It really shows how much power Chevron deference gives to these federal agencies, huh?
Oh, yeah, a huge amount of power, and not everyone was happy about that.
I bet, especially with something as important as how we regulate the internet.
Oh, yeah. This case had some pretty strong dissenting opinions.
Oh, I bet. Who were the dissenters and what were they worried about?
Well, it was Justice Scalia who really led the charge on this one, joined by Justices Souter and Ginsburg. Scalia argued that the majority was misinterpreting the Communications Act and basically giving the FCC way too much power. He believed that, you know, just by its nature, providing internet access requires transmitting data. So it has to be a telecommunications service no matter what.
So Scalia is saying that, like, the very nature of providing internet access means that it should be classified as a telecommunication service, regardless of any additional processing or anything else that might be involved.
Exactly. He saw it as a pretty straightforward issue of just interpreting the statute.
Right.
And to him, you know, the FCC trying to reframe it as a single integrated service, it just didn't make sense.
Okay, interesting. So did Scalia raise any other concerns beyond just how to interpret the Communications Act?
Oh, yeah. He went even further. He was worried about, like, the bigger picture, you know, what happens if you give agencies too much power to just reinterpret laws however they want.
Right.
He saw this as a potential threat to the separation of powers, you know, that whole idea.
Right.
He argued that if agencies can just reinterpret laws however they like, well, then, you know, that could really weaken Congress's role in actually setting policy.
That's a big concern. He's basically saying that too much deference to these agencies could really upset the balance of power between the different parts of our government.
That's right. And that whole debate, like, what's the proper scope of Chevron deference? That's a question that people are still arguing about today. And we'll talk more about that later. But before we do that, there are a couple of other opinions from this case that I think are worth mentioning.
Okay, let's hear about them. Who else weighed in and what did they have to say?
All right, so you also had Justices Stevens and Breyer, and they both wrote concurring opinions. So they agreed with the majority, in, you know, they sided with the FCC, but they had some additional points to make, some clarifications.
Okay, so let's get into those nuances. What did Stevens have to say?
Well, Stevens really wanted to emphasize the difference between, you know, what a lower court says and what the Supreme Court says.
Yeah.
You know, lower court rulings, those don't necessarily bind agencies like the FCC. But when the Supreme Court rules on something, that's a different story, right? Yeah. That applies to everyone.
So if the Supreme Court has already weighed in on how to interpret a specific part of the Communications Act, the FCC can't just go and reinterpret it differently, even if they think they've got a good reason.
Exactly. Stevens was basically trying to draw a line in the sand when it comes to who has the final say in these matters.
Okay, so that makes sense. It's about making sure the Supreme Court has the ultimate authority when it comes to interpreting the law.
Okay.
So what about Breyer's concurrence? What were his main points?
Well, Breyer was really focused on defending how flexible Chevron deference is. You know, he was saying that agencies shouldn't always have to go through the super formal process of rulemaking every time they interpret a statute.
Right.
You know, they shouldn't have to do that just for their interpretation to be given deference by the courts.
So even if an agency hasn't gone through this really formal process of clarifying how they're interpreting a law, the court should still generally defer to the agency's expertise, especially if the law itself is kind of ambiguous.
That's exactly it. He was thinking about the practical side of things, you know?
Right.
How do agencies actually function? And he argued that if you require them to be too formal all the time, well, that could really slow things down.
That makes sense. It sounds like these concurrences really add some important details to how we understand Chevron deference, you know, how it actually works in real life. But I'm curious about the lasting impact of Brand X itself. How did this case actually end up shaping how the internet is regulated?
One of the big things that came out of Brand X was the, it's called the Brand X Doctrine. It basically says that lower courts can't bind agencies to a particular interpretation of a statute unless they explicitly say that the statute is totally unambiguous.
Okay, so unless a lower court comes right out and says, like, this law is crystal clear and here's exactly what it means, an agency like the FCC has more freedom to change how they interpret the law over time, maybe to adapt to new technologies or challenges.
Exactly. And that idea, that doctrine, has had a huge impact on internet regulations, especially when you think about net neutrality and all the debates surrounding that.
Okay, I'm really starting to see how this case, you know, it seems pretty technical at first. It's about cable modems and all this legal stuff, but it's actually super relevant to the internet that we use every single day.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example, like a real world example of how the Brand X doctrine has played out when it comes to internet policy?
Oh, absolutely. Remember how we talked about the FCC initially classifying cable modem service as an information service under President Bush?
Yeah, that was back in the early 2000s, right?
Right, exactly. So that meant lighter regulation. But then fast forward to 2015 during the Obama administration.
I feel like a plot twist is coming.
Well, the FCC, using their authority under the Brand X doctrine, they decided to reclassify broadband internet.
Okay.
They called it a Title II telecommunications service.
Wow. So they totally reversed what they had said before. What made them change their minds like that?
Well, this was all about net neutrality, you know, trying to make sure that all internet traffic is treated equally.
Right.
By calling broadband a Title II service, the FCC could do more to prevent internet providers from, you know, blocking or slowing down certain types of online content or even giving priority to certain types of content.
So they used their power to reinterpret the law to try and achieve a specific policy goal. That's a pretty big deal. It really shows how powerful the Brand X doctrine can be. But wait, didn't this story take another turn after that?
You're right, it did. The pendulum swings back, you could say. In 2017, under the Trump administration, the FCC used that same Brand X doctrine to switch things back again.
No way. They reversed it again. So what happened to net neutrality?
Yeah, a lot of those net neutrality rules were rolled back. And honestly, you know, this is a debate that people are still arguing about today.
This whole back and forth is making my head spin. What does all this tell us about the Brand X doctrine? Like, what does it say about how we regulate the internet?
I think it shows us there's this constant tension between wanting flexibility and wanting things to be stable. The Brand X doctrine gives agencies this power to adapt to new technologies. You know, as things change, they can change the rules. But it also means that those rules could change drastically every time a new president comes in.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? It's good to be able to adapt, but too much change could be bad for businesses and just regular people who use the internet. It creates a lot of uncertainty.
Exactly. And that brings us to another really interesting part of this whole story. Remember how we said Chevron deference was so important in the Brand X case?
Yeah, it's at the whole foundation for how the FCC regulates the internet.
Right.
Right. Well, Chevron deference itself is facing some serious challenges right now. There are a lot of people, even some on the Supreme Court, who want to weaken Chevron, maybe even get rid of it completely.
Wow, that's a huge deal. If Chevron goes away, what happens to Brand X? What happens to the FCC's power to regulate the internet?
That's the million-dollar question. A lot of legal experts are watching this really closely. If the Supreme Court decides that courts shouldn't defer to agencies as much as they have in the past, that could really shake things up when it comes to cases like Brand X.
It sounds like the future of the internet is kind of hanging in the balance here. So what are some of the possible outcomes? What could happen if Chevron deference is weakened or if the court gets rid of it completely?
Yeah, it's kind of wild to think about, you know? Something as big and important as the internet and its future might actually depend on this old legal idea, Chevron deference.
Right. So what are some of the things that could happen? Like, what are the possible scenarios if the Supreme Court really does decide to change things with Chevron?
Well, one thing is that the FCC, you know, their authority to regulate the internet, that could be seriously weakened. Like, if the courts are no longer required to give as much weight to how the FCC interprets laws like the Communications Act,
right,
it could lead to a much more fragmented, unpredictable regulatory environment.
So instead of having a federal agency like the FCC setting these like overall rules for things like internet access and net neutrality, we could end up with a bunch of different rules in different states, maybe even different cities and towns.
Yeah, exactly. And that could create all sorts of problems, especially for the companies that actually provide internet service.
Right.
They'd have to deal with all these different rules depending on where they're doing business. It could also mean that people in different parts of the country would have different levels of protection, you know, different levels of access to online services depending on where they live.
It sounds like that could be a real mess, especially these days when the internet feels so global and connected. What are some of the other consequences that our listeners should maybe be thinking about?
Another big one is what happens to Congress. If Chevron deference is weakened, it could mean that Congress has to step up and write clearer, more specific laws about the internet.
So instead of just relying on agencies like the FCC to like fill in the blanks and figure out how to keep up with the latest technology, Congress would need to be more proactive. They need to be very specific about how they want the internet to be regulated.
Exactly. And that has its pluses and minuses.
Right.
I mean, on the one hand, it could be good for democracy because elected representatives, the people we voted for, would have a bigger say in how things work online.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it could also mean more gridlock. You know, Congress can be really slow to act, especially when it comes to complicated tech issues.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that this legal debate about Chevron deference could really have such a huge impact on how we use the internet, you know, something that's become so important in our daily lives. So as we wrap up our deep dive into the Brand X case, what are the key things you hope our listeners will take away from all of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just realizing that internet regulation isn't set in stone. It's always changing as technology changes. And cases like Brand X, they really show how legal ideas and court decisions can play a big role in shaping how that evolution happens.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that even stuff that seems kind of technical or abstract, like Chevron deference, can actually have a big impact on our daily lives, especially when you're talking about something as universal as the internet. Any final thoughts for our listeners before we wrap things up?
You know, I would just encourage everyone to stay informed and get involved in these discussions about how we want to regulate the internet. It's a complicated issue, and there are a lot of different opinions about it, but it affects all of us. The future of the internet really depends on how we address these challenges. So make your voice heard.
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more about Brand X and Chevron deference, you can find links to all of the materials we used in the show notes. There's a lot more to explore here. Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive into such an important case.